Welcome back, my listeners, to Canvas of the Soul, where words come alive and emotions find their voice. This is your host, Anissa Patman. It has been a while since my last episode, but I have an amazing treat for you today, and more to come in 2024. Yes, just like I said, more to come in 2024. Remember, you can find this podcast on Spotify, Apple, and Google, and also at our website at mycanvasthesoul.com. Again, that's mycanvasthesoul.com. Today, just like I stated, I have a very special treat for all of you literature enthusiasts out there. Joining me today is a brilliant new author and poet whose words resonate with raw emotion and profound insights. Prepare to be captivated by the artistry of John Deering III as we explore his perspective on life, love, and intricate dance of words in his new book, Jotted Down Madness, which you can find on Amazon. So, grab your favorite beverage, find a cozy spot, and let's dive into the enchanting world of John Deering III on Canvas of the Soul, right after this message from our sponsor.
This part of the podcast is sponsored by Crazy Dreams. Unlimited dreams, infinite possibilities. Learn how to live your best possible life through self-love and effective self-management. Log on to crazydreams.com.
All right, all right. Mr. John Deering, thank you for being a special guest on Canvas of the Soul. I am so excited to have you here with me and to have this a candid conversation, but more importantly, talk about your new book, which is called Jotted Down Madness, which I really love the title. But I think what I love the most, too, that you have put kind of like in your book when it's describing you as the author is failure is not an option, which I like. Which I think sometimes if all of us kind of had that type of motto, it would probably help us to persevere a little bit more or to keep that hope and keep going. I think sometimes people get stuck, you know, if they fail, they feel like there's no way out sometimes.
So I mean, when you think about it, there's only one way to fail. That's to give up.
Yep.
If you stop, if you never keep going, that's when you fail. Otherwise, you may have to backpedal. You may have to take smaller steps, faster steps. You may have to pivot. You
right.
may have to just stand there for a while. You know what I mean? But
unless
you give up, then that's the only time you fail. So, and I think, you know, just looking at it from that perspective, kind of like dummies down how big failure could be in your life. So then it's like, you know, every failure is just like, I just got to keep moving. So,
yep. I think that's so true, but I think sometimes people, they do, you know, they get stuck, you know, they feel lost and maybe they don't have anyone to kind of help to encourage them or inspire them, motivate to let them know that, hey, everybody fails. Even the greatest leaders of our time have failed. But the difference is that, like you said, they kept going, right? They didn't give up.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's key. But before I get into all of that, because I could talk to you about everything, I know that this is John Deering III, and you are a director of people strategy and development for delivery operation at Randstad, which is a staffing agency. What does that big title mean? What do you do?
What do I do? Right. So if I had a job description, it'd be a one liner. Get stuff done. Like that's essentially what I do. I consider myself to be, for Ron said, a client consultant. Mm-hmm. And depending on whatever opco I end up partnering with, depending on what their priorities are, depending on what their big rocks are that their teams can't, that their leaders can't get to just due to bandwidth and running the day-to-day activities of the business. But they know if we can have somebody focus on these things, it can really reshape or enhance our department. So those end up being my projects. And then I project manage those. When it comes to the way I operate, I'm a loner. So usually I come in by myself. do an assessment of what's going on, what the priorities are, and find either ways, tools, or find people internally that can help us accomplish these goals. And then I map it all out. I make it about 80% to completion, and then I put it in the hands of the leaders to navigate it and facilitate it throughout their teams.
That's awesome. I can say, though, that you go beyond that. I mean, I know I've tapped on your shoulders quite a few times just to kind of help people just with their resume or to help them find jobs. And I know one particular case where you sincerely you helped someone that was struggling and you helped them to find something. And I appreciate that about you. Sometimes you can't just go to different people, although that's their job to place people. But you sincerely care and you take time to even review their resumes, which I know you don't have time to do that, but you take the time, which is so important. And you also helped my mentee, and you helped revise his resume. And he was so ecstatic that he's just like, I'm excited. I'm on LinkedIn now. And so I appreciate that you're always willing to help regardless of how busy you are. And that speaks a lot about your character. So thank you for that. What I also noticed from you about your book, not that I'm a Zodiac person, I'm not going to give you an exact date of your birthday. It's people see it in the book, but you're a Capricorn.
I'm a Capricorn. Yep. And I've heard that I'm a true Capricorn too. So whatever that means.
Yeah, I'm a true Capricorn too. We're loners by heart, but we have a big heart and we really like to help people. So that's what I think of us as when I say true Capricorns.
And yeah, I can sum it up.
Yep. And you're also from Dayton, Ohio.
Correct.
So do you miss that? Do you still have family in Dayton, Ohio? I know now you moved to Fort Lauderdale, I guess, think when you were around 20. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's interesting. I grew up in Ohio, but I became a man in Florida.
Wow.
Yeah. So my first 20 years was in Ohio. Now I'm working on 21 out here in Florida. And do I miss it? No, absolutely not. Do I have family in Ohio? Yes. So I frequently go and see them at least once a year. But there's, besides family, there's nothing else for me in Ohio. That's my past, and that's where I want to keep that little city.
No, I got you. Well, we're going to dig a little bit deeper into that, because I know you mentioned in your book, Jotted Down Madness, about, you know, just some of the that you've, I think, experienced some difficulties, maybe, I guess, growing up there or just do it like out your life. And if you have a moment, can we explore that just a little bit?
Sure. So, I mean, so Ohio is small, right? Dayton, Ohio is even smaller, right? And in small areas, you know, it's out in Dayton. When I was living there, it was predominantly just black and white. And the white areas, black people didn't go to. You know, you had that, it wasn't the welcoming areas. I'll say it from that perspective. Wow. And then when it comes to dating, job opportunities and just like seeing your community elevate and thrive, you didn't see that. Like, wow. You didn't, it was all the same stuff. It was, you know, everybody does the same thing. Either you're hustling or you're working in a factory, you know, you're having kids or you're just out sleeping around. Like it was nothing really to, you could see, you know, generations that already know what your future is going to be. Like you just kind of fell into place to it. Everybody knew everybody. So it was easy to get into stuff. It was easy to, you know, branch in and just kind of latch on to the norm, so to speak. So, for me, it was, you know, when you're going through it, you don't notice that. I'm, you know, sure, presenting this to you looking back now, you know. But I knew that there weren't any serious opportunities for me in Ohio. So when I found the opportunity to get out of there, I went ahead and took it and never looked back. My friends from like back in grade school and high school, either they moved out of Ohio, or they're most cases locked up or dead.
Oh, wow. Wow.
So I have, you know, and then there's people that obviously still there, but you know, right. Some of them, you know, you'll have the same mindset and the same conversations and mannerisms that we did when we were in high school. So,
wow,
I know getting out of Ohio and getting to Florida was one of the best moves for me, 100%.
No, I can understand that. Wow. So you've has Dayton, Ohio changed now?
No, it looks the same. Like I go eat at the same places. If they're still open, you know, and the same people still work there. Like this is no change at all. But you know, you also, so you know, I don't want to make it all seem like it's just the terrible of the terrible. I mean,
right.
Dayton raised me and made me who I am. Like the experiences that I went through helped allow me to be resilient. You know, also allowed me to, it's still Midwest. So, you know, as far as having manners, you know, like when you make eye contact with somebody walking across the street, you say hi to them and keep it moving, you know?
Right.
If you see somebody that seems like they're hurt, you stop and ask what's going on. Are you okay? You know, so I did learn a lot of foundational traits that I carry with me to this day, you know, from there.
Right.
But when it comes to an opportunity, there was no opportunity for me in Ohio.
Gotcha. But it sounds like people still, like, they cared, but to your point, there just wasn't any opportunities.
Correct.
Makes sense. Okay. So I get it. I get it. I get it. It's so different when you're growing up, different places, and how you experience things. Because even just being, I mean, even being Black, you know, we all have different experiences, right? Just depending on how you were raised, what environment, and things like that. But I think I kind of agree with you. Your environment can make you stronger if you allow it to. You probably don't notice it in that moment. Because I know.
Right.
I know I'm from Denver. We consider that Midwest as well too, but you know, had a pretty good, you know, growing up and things like that, I didn't realize until I left home how all those foundations that my family instilled in me made me like a stronger person. Cause if it wasn't for that, ooh wee, I was a scary little thing.
Moving to Florida directly from Ohio was a huge culture shock, and not just, you know, Florida's like a melting pot. You got so many different, you know, ethnicities out here, but it was more so, you know, just the being approachable. Like, you know, again, you walk across the street, down the street, you see somebody make eye contact, hi, and keep it moving. Right.
Right.
Out here, people were walking past me like I wasn't even present. I didn't like it. But hold on, you didn't hear me say hi to you? Like, you can't stop and say hi. And they're like, "Okay, they're speaking Spanish." I'm like, "Oh shoot! Like you don't even speak English? Like, oh,
like what's happening?
But you're darker than me. Like you don't even speak English." So it was a huge, you know, like, all right, I need to really like humble myself. This is bigger. The world is bigger than me now, you know, type of thing.
Yeah.
So that was definitely the first couple of years from Ohio to Florida was definitely an adjustment, to say the least.
It's so funny because my first world experience, I moved from Denver to Florida and Daytona Beach to go to college there.
Okay.
And it was definitely a shocker. It wasn't something I was used to. There was more Black people than I ever could imagine, which was a good thing.
Yeah.
I think the bad thing was, you know, Denver back then would be predominantly white. And then I go to Florida. Florida was the first place when somebody called me the N-word. I was like, what? What's happening here? What's happening?
Like, me?
I know, right? I definitely.
What did I do to deserve that?
Right? And I wanted to say something. And my friend's like, no. I was just like, why not? She's like, first of all, you're female and we're out here by ourselves. I was like, okay.
Mm.
I was being feisty, even though I know. I wasn't even a fight. I just kind of got fired up on that, but I can definitely understand like the culture shock, but it helped me to grow up, you know, where I felt, you know, at home, you feel secure and maybe shelter a little bit. And then you get out there in the world, just like you
comfort zones. Yeah.
Yep. You got to figure it out. All right. Let's talk about this jotted down madness. a book. It's a book of poetry, and I'm curious, how did you come up with this title?
So, it made sense to say it, to call it that, because so like everything in this book is just, it comes from everywhere. Like, it's no real rhyme or reason about the book. It's not like I woke up one day and was like, you know what, I want to be a writer. I woke up one day and I just had a lot on my mind, and I'm sitting here and I just started seeing words just floating around in the sky, and I'm like, all right, well, let me get these out of my head, because they're trying to get out. So let me get them out of my head. I grabbed a piece of paper and I grabbed a pencil and I just started writing. And then I read it and I'm like, oh, okay, that actually made sense. Let me write another one. And I wrote. And like first time I started writing, I wrote 7 poems. Just back to back to back to back to back until I stopped, sitting down, looked up. I didn't see the words anymore. So I'm like, okay, so now they're all on paper. So then it ended up becoming an outlet for me.
Okay.
But it still wasn't, I still wasn't intentional about, oh, I'm going to write a book, you know, until I started, I met a friend who also wrote as an outlet, and they also did music, and had a cousin that did music and he also wrote. So then it was like, okay, these people are actually intentional about their writing. Like they're making things that are tangible because they're making music with it. So I was like, okay, well, maybe I can be intentional with this. So, and then maybe a decade went by, and you know, I would write here and there. And then I just remember one day I just started reading my old poems. And I mean, like, seriously, from like 8, 9, 10 years ago. And they were all relevant to today.
Oh, wow.
Like, they were relevant. And I'm like, okay, so now I'm like, I'm on to something. I'm writing it forward with forward thinking. So when I started compiling them all and putting them all together, and I'm like, okay, so I got enough for this, so I can call this chapter this. I got enough for this, so I can call this chapter this. And I got these other 3. So you know what? I'll just start writing in these chapters now to complete this book. Now I want to write a book. And then when it always just jotted down madness to me. So, and you know, it's so also look at the way this, that is the wordplay in the title, jotted down, like jotted. If you're saying it, it's like jotted down.
Yeah,
right?
Jotted down.
But I'm saying jotted down, like jot it down or jot it down. It's just playing in itself. And that was madness. So I'm like, okay, jotted down madness it is.
Wow. Now I have quite a few favorites in here. So I don't know if you can come top of your head what led to writing these, but some of my favorites, I have like 4 favorites. I have a lot of favorites, but my top one are like the one titled Infectious Love, like is love a virus? Like,
talk
more about that.
I got the book. Hold on, I can look at it. Infectious Love. So, all right. So, now, granted, all these aren't necessarily about me. They are just, a lot of them are just about the actual title of the poem, right?
Right.
But so I was just, in that one, I was just making a comparison of, you know, like something that's deep. So, you know, in infectious love, when we think of infectious love, it's always, oh, I'm so head drawn to you. Like I you know, I can't breathe without you, that type of romance. Right. But there are other ways to describe that as well. Like a virus can't breathe without you.
That's true. That's deep.
So like, I was just making a contrast to it, you know, infectious love. Like, it's more ways of looking at it. I like to kind of shock the brain, so to speak, and what people say, like, and you know, for that, it's like, okay, like you really, really listen to what you're saying about this person. Like, and that infectious love, that may not be good.
Yeah,
it just may not be good.
There's good love and there's bad love.
So
sometimes something disguised as love.
Right. You know, exactly. But see, we don't look at it like that when we're talking. We're just talking and saying all these extravagant things. When we break it down, it's like, did I really mean that?
Gotcha. Okay. So I have to
then
ask.
It could also be when we have miscommunication. So you may be talking about your type of infectious love, and I may be turned off from it. Like, no, I don't want you to love me like that. Like, no, like you're gonna leech onto me like a virus. Like, no, I don't like that. That's not the type of love I want to be a part of. And then without us having, you know, proper communication, we don't even know how we're rubbing somebody the right way or wrong way.
That's true. It's so funny because I had a conversation with my daughter, and I was telling her, because sometimes she was saying, oh, I feel sad and things like that. And all my friends, they have like a boyfriend and I don't. And I looked at her and I said, well, the one thing when you meet someone, you know, you've got to be happy within, because the last thing that someone else wants is somebody that they feel that they have to be their happiness, make them happy. That's like dream and stuff. So I'm hoping she gets that. You learn that once you go in and out of relationships and things like that when you mature. But yes, and you're correct. Some love can be infectious the right way, and sometimes it can be the wrong way. So I have to ask, Mr. Deering, have you ever been in love? Are you in love?
I've been married twice. I've been married and divorced twice. So, okay. Not only have I been in love, but I've been enticed by love. I've been totally drawn to two people in my entire life. And you know, it always takes two to tango.
Right.
Sit here and say that I was, you know, the complete innocent person. We were all growing up together. You know what I mean? But it just didn't work out for, you know, for whatever reasons. Now I am a hopeless romantic, so I'm open to it. I'm open to being married again. You know,
okay.
I keep myself, you know, I keep my eyes open, so to speak. Am I in a relationship now? No.
Okay. Because you know, once I advertise the podcast and then I'm going to put your picture out there, I know I know some of my people are like, who is that? Who's that that you interviewed? But you like,
well, I put on an extra small shirt.
But you like a little brother, so I can't be setting you up, because if I set you up with the wrong folks, then you're going to be right about me.
Like Anissa, you didn't tell me.
Oh, my goodness. I also like the one about faith, because I'm like,
okay,
into my faith. And I like when you stated here, like, faith is believing in what's unseen, which is in the scriptures, of course. And it comes by hearing, not by sight. Hope, that's what's written in what's right. Trusting with all might that through night, God actually said, let there be light. Then the Holy Spirit, obeying, manifested unmatched power, believing in the basic instructions before leaving earth, then knowing where you're going, and a higher power, everlasting love is worth. And then I love God because I'm loved by God when I've done nothing to deserve it. So tell us a little bit more about your faith and how that keeps you going.
You basic instructions before leaving earth, you know, that is the Bible right there, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's one thing to have faith. It's one thing to have assurance, right? Yeah. And if you have assurance in something, then that means you don't have faith in it, because you already know it's tangible. So if you know, like, I know you exist because I see you, like, that's an assurance, right? If we only talked like over the phone, I would have faith that you are actually a woman, right? And not so or not anything else, right?
Right.
It's like, you know, I hear that you sound like a woman, right? You give that appeal off, right? But at the same time, I'm having to have faith that I'm not being deceived, right?
Right.
What I like about, so in this, this was actually more relevant poems that I put into this book. And this is really just kind of letting me know, like, where I'm at when it comes to believing in God and believing in Jesus. So I know there's a God. I know God exists 100%. The things that I've been through, like, there's There's no answer to why I'm here besides somebody, something, and someone has a big calling over my life, and they're going to be using me out of here in this world. 100%. The way that I go about living, that's where my faith needs to be strengthened. So I found myself living with the assurance that God has my back, that God is going to take care of me, that God is going to be there for me. Yet I haven't been doing anything to build up my faith in God so that way he can actually move in my life. And what I realized was God doesn't move in your life if you don't have any faith in him.
Right.
He won't do anything. He'll keep you around, but he won't do anything. He won't bless you to be a blessing to others if your faith isn't there. And if he does, he's going to bless you based upon the level of your faith. So the higher your faith, the stronger your faith, the more he's going to be able to utilize you. And with him utilizing you, is him having the confidence, knowing in your heart that while he's moving in your life, you're not thinking it's you, you're knowing it's him. So you're giving him the glory for it. Giving him the glory for it. Lord, I know I couldn't have did this without you. Thank you. Lord, I thank you for helping me to be able to help that person. Thank you. Lord, thank you for getting me out of this situation. Never me. Oh, I can't believe I was so lucky. No, never me. Yep. So for me, one of these poems is really like me just kind of, this is when I would just write. And when I would read it, I'd be like, wow, this is where I'm at. Gotcha. Like, it makes so much sense. Like, so this wasn't necessarily a deliberate, I didn't have a structure of what I wanted to write about besides that topic.
I got you.
And this is where I feel like the Holy Spirit was writing this through me, like just using me as a vessel.
Absolutely.
Letting me know, okay, this is where we're at. This is how you see me. And this is also where we can go and how.
Yep. No, I definitely understand, because sometimes we can get so caught up in our worlds and in our world, and we, you know, for those that believe, but do you actually walk the path to have that faith? Mm-hmm. Right. And then to your point, do you give God, do you thank him and show him through your works how much he's done for you so that you can help others? It's like my husband, I asked him the other day, I said, do you love your job? He goes, insurance. He's like, and I wouldn't say that I love it. He said, but I'm grateful and blessed from God that it provides me with the security I need to take care of my family and to help others. And to help others. So I think giving that praise to
him, mindset. Yeah.
I think we have to remember that. And I think sometimes we lose sight of that. I think sometimes people that I don't think they do it intentional. I think sometimes he gets to move in some people's lives. He makes things work, and then they forget and get the big head. Oh, it's all me. No, it's not you. God's doing that stuff for you. You know, he's helping you. So I really love this. I really love this section on the religion and about the faith. And I guess that's because of where I am in my journey with God. So I've just been trying to practice what I preach. So I feel like he's always blessed me and always protected me. But I don't feel like I've always done enough as far as living in the scriptures, right? And I read something the other day where it was saying, you know, when you read your scriptures, don't read it where you're just like trying to dissect it or analyze it, which I think that's what I was trying to do before. It was just like, embrace it and envision yourself in that scripture that you're reading so that God can work through you. So that's the journey that I'm on now, to like with my faith. Because sometimes like I can get a little bit protective about my faith. I was talking about that because my sister, she's always trying. She's like, she believes, but she always has that scientific view. Sometimes it can kind of annoy me, you know, with the faith thing and things like that. But it was something we were talking about with Moses, the recent movie, and how the water level went down. And I kind of made the remark, you know, scientists, I've been watching some stuff on the History Channel. They said that the Red Sea was low at this level. I'm like, how come they just can't focus that God did part the sea? And so she kind of shut me up. She was like, does it really matter? They got across. I was like, point well taken. It matters to me, though. It does matter to me. But I get her point, but it does matter to me because I'm like,
well,
don't take away from any of the miracles that he did and
Right.
Because he's
And
yeah.
I personally didn't like that movie because
Neither.
for certain I didn't think it was biblical because in the Bible it said it didn't say they crossed, it said they crossed some dry land.
But yep.
They crossed on dry land. Like
Man,
the
yep.
water didn't recede. The water was moved. It
Parted,
was
yes.
yes, it was out of their way.
Yep.
Like
Okay.
they walked on dry land.
I'm glad I'm not alone because I felt
My
go ahead.
well, my pastor had said recently, he said, Jesus told us to spread the word, not argue it.
Yep.
So if people, hey, I'm just gonna tell you I'm just gonna tell you my rendition of the word. And if you don't like what you hear, it's perfectly fine. I'm not gonna argue with you over it. You can
Right.
read the same thing, you can read the same verses that I've been reading. So and just move on from there. I don't even entertain conversations like that anymore. Like we're not here to argue the word. We're just here to spread it.
Yeah, that's so true. I think she just does it to nitpick with me. Because she knows it's going to get underneath my skin because that whole movie had me, because to me, they made it seem like he fell and got a concussion. Like, no, God deliberately spoke to him through this burning bush, but okay. But yeah, so I'm real strong about my faith, but sometimes I can get a little bit too protective and maybe, which you don't want to turn people away because you want them to embrace God. So I'm working on that. I'm working on that.
Well, and then I wouldn't put that much pressure on yourself either. So
Yeah.
you can't change anybody. Only God
Oh,
can.
no. Yeah.
So, it's like stay active in the word, and you never know when God is going to pull those verses out of you to say them to somebody. I've been talking to somebody and I'm like, you just made what you just said just made me think about Psalms 37. I'm like, where'd that even come from?
Yeah.
Like I don't have a lot of verses memorized, but when stuff like that happens, I'm like, okay, God is pouring into my little subconscious biblical library in my brain and pulling these verses out right now to speak to this particular person. So
Person.
this I'm God's vessel right now. Cool. Go ahead. Let's go. I'm here.
Yeah.
I just need to be here, and I'm just going to keep reading so that way you can keep tapping into that biblical library whenever needed.
Wow. Like I said, some of my other good pieces that I like were Relax and Let the Light Shine. I also liked Who Can I Trust? I really loved your book. But tell me
Appreciate it.
what's because you wrote this, so where are some of the pieces that you enjoy the most? Do you have your favorite?
Oh shoot. I it's really rhyme styles and certain ones of what gets me. Like where did they even come from? Like so in certain scenes I use alliteration. And I'm like, I don't even know where these words came from. Like I would have to look them up just to make sure that I'm using them the right way. And then I'll be like, oh,
Right.
now that I see the definition, I can actually use it a totally different way too. So let me see. I got one that really stood out to me. Hold on, where is it at? I want to say it's called Ruby Glare.
Player.
Yeah, it's on page 37. So what chapter is this in? This is in the love chapter.
Okay, I'm there.
I can read it. I read it
Yeah,
fast.
read it. You don't have to
All
read it.
right. So Ruby Glare. As I stare in the plot parked in this lot, one hand busy holding my shot, a glare catches my attention. I can envision you walking towards me, enticing my curiosity, envisioning a destiny never lonely since you're by me as my baby. As you get closer, breath leaves me suddenly, nerves overwhelm me, placing me at your mercy. Just the sight of you adds light in the dark light, like a bright spark squinting my eyes, but I keep them open with all my might just to continue to see you. As I gaze at you, My mind memorizes you. My heart fantasizes because of you. My faith chastises from what I'm planning to do to you. And my mission is to mesmerize you. That's all I got.
Tell us more.
I knew where I was then, and when I wrote this one,
where were you?
I was so my second wife, which was, we were dating at the time, I pulled up to her mom's house, and I was in the parking lot, and I had a drink with me, and she was walking out, and as I seen her, I'm like, I started writing. Like, she was literally, it probably took her 5 minutes to get to the car. And by the time she got to the car, I was on the last line.
Oh, wow.
And then she's like, what are you doing? I'm like, hold on, let me just get this out real quick. And matter of fact, I was doing it on my phone. And then I'm like, all right, let me read this. And I read it to her. She's like, where'd that come from? I was like, I just seen you walking.
Oh.
Needless to say, that was a good night.
Oh, but you've always had this talent. You've always had this talent of poetry.
I definitely haven't like, you know, did any like investing into it to like hone it. You know, I haven't did any like writing courses or anything. I haven't YouTubed any how the best ways of doing poetry. Like, I just sit here and I just let it go. Like, it's like the hand just takes over, and I read it like, okay, so that makes sense.
I think that's what makes it a little bit more unique, you know. It's
true.
Truly just coming from the heart and the moment. I mean, the fact that you sat there and wrote that poem as she was walking towards the car. But I'm amazed that you kind of held on to some of this poetry for so long. And thank goodness for us that we get to read it, because you published it. But
right.
It seems like you've been sitting in a lot of good poetry for a long time.
I've so the one you said you like, Who Can I Trust? I wrote that when I was 16.
Wow.
That was one of those seven. One of the first ones I ever wrote, Who Can I Trust?
Wow.
And like, you know, so I've, you know, I mean, I moved to several different places in Ohio and out here in Florida. And for some odd reason, these notebooks are always going with me. Like, they're always going with me. They're always traveling with me. And I mean, bunch of notebooks. I just found a notebook last week that I was working on 2 years ago. It was dated in 2020, 2021.
Oh, wow.
Just found it like right over here. It's in the corner. I'm like, oh, there it is. Okay, I need that. Cause I had some hot stuff in there that's going to be going for my second and third book that I'm working on right now.
Wow.
But yeah, like these notebooks, they keep coming with me.
That's
by grace of God, they keep coming with me.
But that's awesome, though. And it's awesome that you can get this out there to the public so everyone can read it and get their own experience from it. Like I said, mm-hmm. a lot of them hit home with me. Like I kind of got into them. And mm-hmm. some of them had to read like twice. I'm like, okay, what does this mean? This is deep. but I mean, I really enjoyed it. I think the book is well put together. So I'm excited when the second one's coming out. The second and third one coming out together, or are you going to put them in?
I don't know. So I have, so this is called Jotted Down Madness, right? So my next one is going to come out. Is going to be called Topics. Maelstrom Topics. So basically I was just jotting down a bunch of random. Now everything is now this, but in six categories. Now this one is just going to be a bunch of random topics.
Okay.
So I want to say, as far as the material, I want to say I'm about 80% done with that one.
Okay.
Then I have two more. I don't know if I'm going to combine them. I don't think I will, but I could combine them and just make them two different chapters. One is on short poems. So I'm calling that poetic therapy. Okay. That's what I'm calling that one. And then there's a and I'm hitting it just more so on the thing of, here's a topic, but you know, this is how you can look at it, but this is how you can go through it.
Gotcha.
You know, just it's like I'm trying to be a lot more therapeutic with that one. And then there's another one which is going to be called Praise Him, which is all praises with God. So I'm like, you know, I kind of could combine those because both of those are therapeutic in a sense, right? You know, just looking for, or I would say self-development, which is kind of along the lines of why I'm thinking about combining both of those. So if I do, then that would be two more. If not, then I'm working it out. Then I'm working on three.
Okay. Okay. Now I love to read. So that means I'm going to have my own John series, John Deering series, right? I'll be able to have my own John Deering series. But this is amazing though, because it sounds like you just, like you've been writing since you were a teenager.
Yeah.
And you just kind of kept them in these notebooks and then just recently just started to, hey, let me publish
make this. It make sense.
Make
yeah
it make sense. I think that's amazing, and I also think that it's inspiring for others that are just writing down their thoughts, you know, that they could possibly share, you know, with others that could potentially help them, inspire them. I'm sure just people listening to you, you've inspired them to move forward, whether that's writing or whatever, you know, their goals or aspirations may be. So I think that I think that's wonderful. Wow.
There's a challenge that I throw out to everybody.
Okay.
It's on page 81. It's the first poem in the Jotted Down Madness chapter, which is like miscellaneous. It's called Life After Death. If anybody can tell me what I'm talking about in this poem. Okay. If anybody, like, I don't even care what the challenge is. I don't think anybody's gonna understand it.
Okay.
But if anybody can get it, like, big kudos to that person. Big kudos. I will personally find them to sign the book.
Okay,
how about
okay.
that? At minimum.
So if I issue the challenge, you want them to respond to my email address, or how do you want me to do that? Because I will issue the challenge to the listeners.
You could put mine on there. It's fine.
Okay. Okay.
Or if you want to, you know, kind of control the following, you know, you can have yours and just keep me in the loop. I mean, we work hand in hand every day. So.
Okay.
Either way.
Now you're going to make me go back and read this.
You're not going to get it.
Do I get the, you said I'm still not going to get it?
You're not going to get it.
I'm not going to get it. Do we get a hint?
I've had. No. And okay. So.
Okay. you said we're not going to get it, so I'm assuming.
Let me see. What's the hint? Let me see. Okay, so okay, a good hint, and I'm going to give this hint because everybody that I challenged, they all said this. I'm not talking about myself.
Gotcha.
I'm not talking about myself in this poem.
Okay, so that's the hint. You're not talking.
That's
about
the hint.
Yourself.
Correct.
You're going to make us work for this. Okay. I'm going to issue this challenge out.
But when they, so like when you discover it, it's like, wow, like you really wrote that. And I think that's one of my most creative poems in this book.
Wow. So when people get the book for the writer symposium that's coming up at Ronstadt, we're going to have to, I'm going to have to get gift cards to a winner. I'm going to have to issue a challenge now. Okay.
Nobody's going to get it.
Nobody's
going to get it. No way. Not going to happen. Nobody's going to get it.
Okay. Now, if nobody gets it, are you going to tell us? Are you going to tell us? Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Because then, I like to do the challenge because I like, you know, I mean, this is writing. So it's not about right or wrong. It's about perspective, right? So I like to hear other people's perspective on it. And it's like, wow, like you actually got that from that. That's, you know, that just shows the creative side of the artwork, right?
Right.
But when I tell them, because I won't tell you, I'll show you what it is. Like I'll send you a YouTube video and then let me know if I was on point or not.
Okay. All right, the challenge is on. The
challenge is on.
Those that are listening, they can find your book on Amazon, right?
Correct.
Okay. So Jot It Down Madness by John Deering III. You can find that on Amazon. So go to amazon.com and then make sure you've heard the challenge. So the poem is Life After Death. It's on page
Page 81.
And so I will post the email address and everything for everyone so that you can submit your entries. And maybe we'll come up with a prize if someone gets it.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
Now, before I let you go, in your book, you also stated where mystery of life is what fuels you. Can you expand on that just a little bit?
The mystery of life is what fuels me. So I don't even remember where I even said that at, but it sounds like something I would say. I mean, just think about it like this, you know, complacency, right?
Yeah.
One of my favorite chapters in this book is the society chapter, because a lot of what I was talking about there was just being free. And, you know, that's also one thing that really got me hooked on writing was the freedom of it. You can't tell me that I'm writing wrong. You can't tell me that this isn't correct. You know, like this is how I wanted to write it. Like, that's the freedom in writing. So now I can talk about these topics in my own viewpoint, from my own perspective. So when I think about the mystery in life is what kind of keeps me fueled, is going back to what we were talking about, of being in our comfort zones and having to get out of our comfort zones, right?
Right.
I the more uncomfortable I became growing up as a man, the more I got accomplished, the more I elevated, the more I excelled, right?
Right.
Going back to what I was saying about Dayton, Ohio, if I was always living there, I mean, if I was alive, I would be complacent. I would be accepting to what the world was going to give me or what the world was going to offer me, as opposed to challenging myself to make my own stepping stones in this world.
Right.
So, if you're comfortable, then you're avoiding the mysteries of life. You're avoiding the opportunity to learn new things. Right. Even going to school, that's uncomfortable because you're learning something new. Right.
Right.
So I chose to be uncomfortable and to stay uncomfortable, so that way I can always grow. So that way I can always excel. So that way I can always learn. So that way I can always be challenged, and challenged in the right ways. You know, most men, we find challenges in making money or competition. Or rivalries, right? But no, right. I actually, but who sits around and just focuses on challenging themselves?
Yeah.
So if the world is going to challenge me anyway, anytime I walk out of my front door, the world is going to challenge me. So I might as well be comfortable being uncomfortable. And because if I'm comfortable, if I can find comfort in being uncomfortable, then I'm always going to grow and make it back home at the same time.
I like that. I like that. So for those that are listening, don't be complacent. Learn to be uncomfortable. So when you come comfortable,
learn to be uncomfortable. But again, this is just a perspective. I mean, there are a lot of people that have, you know, that do excel in comfort. You know, their cars were different cars than the cars that I've been dealt. Right. So the way that I've had to grow and continue to be conscious of moving forward, I need to be uncomfortable. So I wouldn't necessarily say that's the framework out there, but if you want to try something different, get out of your comfort zone. I would suggest that. Yeah.
No, I agree with that. You got to, that's the only way you can try to grow to some extent, right? I mean, you can be complacent and grow or stay stagnant. But I think, like you said, if you challenge yourself, you do something that makes you uncomfortable, you know, it keeps you on your toes, though. You know, it keeps you going because you're not expecting the expected. It's the unexpected, the unknown. And you never know what you can accomplish.
And then my thing is, you know, to be comfortable, staying comfortable, the world is still going to make you uncomfortable at some point.
Yeah.
And then, you know, a lot of times that's when you see people's breakdowns or people's setbacks. And then you wonder, like, man, why can't this person just shake that and keep moving forward, right? But that was their breaking point. That was that first moment for them when they had to be uncomfortable unconsciously, you know, and it's, you know, it's hard to move forward if that was your first time, especially depending on what age you're at, right? So
right.
I like being, for me, it's like then it's like the kind of like the concept of if you're always ready, you don't have to get ready.
Yep. No, I agree. It's awesome. Well, you know, I think you're amazing. So I have something else I want to bring to the audience attention to. So I know that I can't remember, it was during George Floyd and beyond that, when there was so much stuff happening in our world, and with especially with the police and, you know, how they stop African-Americans, how they're treated and things like that. And I know that you and I believe your mom, right, with you and your mother, mm-hmm. that you mm-hmm. guys had created this this product that can go over your visor, that you put all of your credentials in, so that if you are stopped by the police, and this is for anyone, it doesn't just have to be because you're Black, but for correct. Anyone that it, you put your, you can have your driver's license, you can in it, your, I guess your insurance information, whatever proof of credentials that you need that normally the police officers ask for. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, sure. It's the SOS kit. So it does rest on your visor. When you get, you know, in a traffic stop, let me backtrack. The objective is to make the traffic stop as efficient as possible and take away all bias and emotions. Right. That's the objective, right? So it rests on your visor. Usually I recommend people to have your insurance card, your registration already in there at all times, right? Then when you get pulled over, you park. Usually it takes the officer a couple minutes to get out of the car and get to your window. By then you can drop it down, take your IDs, put your IDs in there. We have two displacements for your IDs. For example, you can have a concealed weapon license and also your driver's license. So you can put both of those in there, roll down the window, see your car, hands on the steering wheel. Officer comes in, they have no choice but to just do their job.
Right.
License, insurance, and registration. So my hands are on my steering wheel. I'm looking and say, hey, they're right in front of me. So the officer, you know, I don't slide it over to them unless they ask me to, because I don't want to ruin their line of sight in the vehicle. So sir, ma'am, you can reach in there. You can grab those identifications you're looking for, or I can slide them over to you to grab them. Your call, right? I'll share an example. So phenomenal when I firsthand realized that this product works. So I was totally guilty. It was a slow person in front of me, and the light was turning yellow. I'm like, no, I'm not waiting behind this person any longer. Boop, go around and run the light. Cop is right there, flashes his lights immediately. Busted, right? So I'm pulling over, and as I'm pulling over, you know, I'm reaching in my wallet, getting out my concealed carry license as well as my driver's license. I stop, swing down my visor, put my IDs in there, hands on the steering wheel, windows down. I look over, the cop is already at my window. I'm like, I don't even know how he got to my window so fast. Like, I've never, okay, so you're on one, right? Okay. License, insurance, and registration. So I'm like, sir, it's right in front of me. He looks completely perplexed. He's like, so I see you have a concealed weapon license. Yes. Is there a gun in the car? Yes, I am licensed to carry a firearm. Okay, but is there a gun in the car? Yes, there is. Where is it? It's on me. Well, don't reach for it. My hand's on the steering wheel. I'm not threatened. Why should I reach for my gun, officer? You know? And then he's like,
my hand's on the steering wheel.
He's like, license, insurance, and registration. I'm like, are you serious right now? Like, he's like, I'll be back. He doesn't take none of my IDs. He leaves. His partner comes around. Is everything okay? You ask your partner. I'm just here. So he comes back and he's like, all right, just leave. Okay, be safe. And I, 5 minutes. And I ran the light.
Wow.
5 minutes. It's never taken me just that short of a time to get pulled over. 5 minutes.
Wow.
I was like, this works. So in my mind, it was, what I liked about it was, you know, he probably came to my vehicle defensive. And when he realized that I was 100% compliant, he didn't know how to take a step back. So he just left me alone.
Yeah, you caught him off guard.
Whatever reason he was defensive, I mean, look, they have a tough job. So we don't know the four traffic stops before I run the light of why he's coming to my door, right?
Right.
Needless to say, it's, you know, they're human beings just like us, right? But again, the objective of the SOS kit is to make it an efficient traffic stop and take away all bias and emotions. I wasn't emotional. He seemed to be. Once it got taken away, he exited. He just left. Like it was over. So that's what a traffic stop should be about. And now granted, if he would have gave me a ticket, okay, you know why I pulled you over. Explain. You ran the red light. Okay, here goes all my information. Do what you got to do. Give me my stuff. I'm gone. That's it. It's still a simple, efficient traffic stop, right? So we had a lot of sales to, and again, it's not just for Black people, but women. Husbands buy them for their wives because their wives, you're reaching, looking for your driver's license in the bottom of your purse, your insurance card in the bottom of your glove compartment, and your registration, you have no idea where it is. So now you're looking everywhere. While you're doing all that fidgeting and looking, the police officer doesn't know what you're pulling out.
Right. That's so true.
They don't know. So husbands will buy it for the wives, and not in one spot, right? Wives will buy it for their young children, young teenagers driving. Wow. I don't want you talking to the police. Like, put the stuff there, shut up, and just let them do their job, you know? So for it was a variety of reasons of how we can make a traffic stop more efficient for the civilian as well as for the police officer.
Wow, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
I still need to get mine because I have a concealed license. My husband doesn't let me put the gun in the car.
You must be a little high strung there, Anissa. Is that what we're hearing right now? Like, is he protecting others? No, don't drive with that. Do we have some road rage, Anissa?
Ex-military.
Right. Yeah.
He probably thinks I could be a little hot. It's like, what you stopping me for? Well, maybe my friend, she's from New York, and she'll do the same. I remember one time she got stopped, and she told me, she was like, she jumped out the car. I was like, why are you stopping me? I'm like, are you crazy? What?
Oh, wow.
She's from New York. I'm like, you can't do that? But no, I think that's awesome, and definitely to save lives. Definitely to save lives. And people can still purchase those, right?
Yes. I actually, my domain needs to be refurbished. So in the next couple months, I will have that up and running. And we can probably do another sequence just on that.
Yeah, most definitely. Most definitely. And I think, and also, too, didn't you guys partner with some of the local officers on this as well? Or did I read that?
No, well, so privately, but we couldn't have them endorsing it.
Gotcha. That makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
So we did host some private events, but nothing that I could actually like film.
But
still, you know, for me, it was just good to know that there's a need for it that's seen on both sides.
Oh, yeah. Because
it was not a one-sided tool. It's definitely for both sides.
No, I definitely see how it's a great product. And it's saving two lives, right? The person who the police officer is stopping and also the police officer as well. And it's putting all the information in one place, concise place where they can review it. And it allows you to keep your hands on the steering wheel so that there's no confusion.
Let them do their job.
Yep. So that they can do their job and you, the driver, can go home safe. So no, I think that's awesome. I have really enjoyed doing this interview. I do have one more question. So who was your superhero growing up as a kid? Did you have a superhero?
Yeah, a bunch of them. So I'm gonna answer that a few different ways. So
okay.
if I wanted like a super mutant power, it would be Wolverine's because I like his healing factor. Okay. It's like, okay, you can go do what you want. You're going to heal, so you'll be fine, right? Like
Wolverine,
YOLO. Yeah, YOLO. So, but as far as like my favorite superhero, I would say was Batman. Because Batman was the only person who wasn't supposed to be out there doing the stuff that he was doing. Like,
that's true.
He wasn't.
He's a
the ultimate
person.
Detective. He's a so every well I would say his dedication for the goals that he wanted was really his superpower, and his money was the way of funding his superpower.
Yeah.
Superman, I always had a gripe with Superman.
Why?
Because Superman,
the alien.
Soup, yes. No, well, no, soup, no, not because of that. It's because of the way he viewed human beings. So Superman, everybody else put on their super costume, right?
Right.
Superman, when he dressed up like a human being as Clark Kent. So when he dressed up, you know, he wore glasses, he was shy, he was weak, he was feeble, he was clumsy. Like, that's how he portrayed humans. So I took offense to it. Like, this is how you see humans. Like, this is how you see us. Like, this is how I blend in with mankind by being this person, Clark Kent.
Oh my goodness. I don't think I ever viewed Superman in that way.
It was a jab.
Or that
it was
how
a jab.
Or how he perceived us. Okay.
It was a jab. Like, yeah.
You're like my daughter. Her favorite superhero is Batman, too. So,
yeah.
But now you got me looking side-eyed at Superman, because I never looked at it in that fashion. All right, so before I let you go, and I'm putting you on the spot here, and this is only because I love when you read your poetry, because you do it a lot at the events that we have at work. So can you close us out with your lovely poem, with one of your poems?
Oh, shoot. All right. You know, like I always like to read the first one. This is in the society chapter. And the title is Racist.
Okay.
If you say that you're colorblind, are you calling yourself a racist? Better yet, if you have a non-colored TV, can't you tell the differences between dark and light, black and white, and etc.? What I'm trying to understand is, if you have a non-colored TV and it's dark, do you brighten the screen or leave it be? Why mess with it? Because it really won't make a difference. You mess with it to change what you can't cope with, to better handle your reality instead of coping and dealing with the reality, wanting your color to be superior because of intolerance of another color. But I thought you had a non-color TV and was colorblind.
Wow, that's deep. I love it. And if I love it. This has been an absolute
pleasure.
So if
anyone likes that, then okay, that's what the book is about. Like,
gotcha.
The book is on things like that to make you think.
Yep. I like it because a lot of different things to make you think. For those that like to be challenged, I encourage you to get the book, Jot It Down Madness, which can be found on Amazon.com and written by John Deering III. So remember that third. And then he also has two more books that are coming our way. So we're excited. And I hope you'll let me interview you again when you release that. And also, I'm putting you on the spot. So I'm telling everyone what you're going to let me do so you can't back out.
Noted. Crafty.
And then we'll have also crafty. A sequence on your SOS kit. So once you guys get that domain back up so that people can purchase that. Because it's definitely a good product that can save lives and keep you safe when you're being stopped by law enforcement, and also keep the law enforcement officers safe as well, too. So we do want to know it's just not one-sided, it's both sides. The whole concept is saving lives. So
yep.
I am so excited, and thank you for joining us on Canvas the Soul. And for my guests, again, you'll This podcast will be distributed. We'll get this up and going no later than Tuesday of this week. Again, you'll be able to find it on Canvas the Soul. We're on every podcast stream from Spotify to Apple, Google, you name it, and we are there. So hopefully all of you guys will listen and then also take up John Deering III on his challenge, his poem Life After Death, which is in his book on page 81. And he just wants to know, do you know what he's talking about? The hint is he is not talking about himself.
And correct.
That's the only hint he's going to give us. But John, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me on this Sunday. And I hope you enjoy the rest of your day.
Same. Stay blessed. Appreciate you.
You too.
Thank you for listening to the Canvas of the Soul podcast. You can contact us at info@canvasthesoul.com. You may learn more about our podcast at canvasthesoul.com.